Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a new episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. Well, that was pointless. Not Raw, all of Raw, though, yeah, that too, but we'll talk about it at length, I'm sure, at the end of the show, but nothing like taking your main title on your flagship show and taking it off your top babyface who's been nigh unbeatable for years and strapping it on the veteran who's lost his last three matches to that guy. Right? Three? I don't know. Then you just wait 3 weeks later and you put it right back on him. Right in time for Survivor Series, which I don't know if you've heard, but it's the one night a year when the superstars of Raw and the superstars of SmackDown go head to head. Unless you count, oh, I don't know, last fucking Friday. But yeah, one night a year. I promise I'm not going to do the crazy Survivor Series rant again. I promise my wife, she's worried about my blood pressure. I'm just kidding. My wife doesn't watch these. She has better things to do with her life than to care one single solitary ounce about WWE. I don't, though, apparently. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about this thing. So we start Raw with Drew McIntyre, of course, coming out to talk, of course. And he talks, he blah, blah, blahs. He mentions Roman and going to SmackDown last week, where he, you know, I just went to try and help Roman. I wanted to help him. You know, I just wanted to go over there and help him. Tell, you don't need to worry about Randy Orton. You got to worry about me. And he didn't want to hear that because he didn't care about Randy Orton and he didn't care about me. He only cares about himself. I mean, he doesn't say this part, but you can extrapolate it from the shit he told Roman to his face a few days ago. He only cares about himself and not Vince McMahon. Vince is very angry that Roman went off and tried to take care of his health and his family during a pandemic. He blah, blah, blah some more. But he's saying, he says, oh, yeah, he doesn't care about anybody and has got his head stuck so far up his own ass. Arse. He doesn't blah, blah, blah. And when he says got his head stuck so far up his own arse, they do a laugh track. Now, I've been largely silent about this whole, I mean, I've mentioned it a few times, but I could have said, I could have spent 20 minutes on it every fucking week. The crowd noise that they're piping in for Raw and SmackDown is just so fucking lazy. But it's like, I get it. Like, you get to control what people think. So you have the people boo Roman, even though he'd be getting so many cheers right now, you guys. People would be cheering for Roman so hard. They have people boo Roman and they boo Randy and they cheer for Drew and whoever else you want them to cheer for. And I understand, but I draw the line at laugh tracks. I draw the line at, unless you tell me at the beginning of your program, like sitcoms in the 80s, Full House was taped in front of a live studio audience. So that you know that I'm not at home going, nah, that's not that funny of a joke. You go, well, 200 people who were out of work on a Wednesday afternoon who decided to show up and watch a taping of a sitcom, well, those people can't be wrong. And if they find it funny, well, I guess I find it funny too. Yeah, that's what they used to do. If there was a laugh, if there was not a laugh track, if there was a live studio audience, they'd tell you so you would feel like it wasn't canned. This was fucking canned. He got his head stuck so far up his own arse. We are robots. Listen to us laugh. Come on, God, we don't need to laugh. Like, would that even get a laugh? Would that even get a laugh if it was done in front of a live audience? I don't know. I have a live audience here. From a Mr. Showoff, who sends, hello, greetings from Poland, 4 a.m. here. My God, God bless you. This crowd audio is awful. It is. I'm actually, my name is Alex Pulaski. I'm actually quarter Polish. My great-grandfather, yes, great-grandfather, Alexander Pulaski the first, because I'm the fourth, he came over here. From Poland in the 1895, something like that. And I apologize, Mr. Showoff, and anybody else, but I usually just pop out the little chat window and then minimize it because I get distracted when I see the chats come up. And this is all very stream of consciousness. I have like four notes. So if I get off the rails any more than I normally do when I'm talking to myself, then this thing could completely collapse. So I have minimized the chat. Mr. Showoff, if you want to send me some more stuff, and I'll read it afterwards, but I won't read it during the show because then my brain might just go sideways. So anyway, but thank you for the message, and thank you for watching from Poland. 4 a.m., my God. The next thing that happens is that Randy Orton does the Jinder Mahal Memorial. Hey, Drew, I'm up here. Hey. And he's talking about, he says, I don't mind. It's fine. I don't mind paying the fine that I had to pay after I put my hands on Adam Pearce last week. Matter of fact, I've been fined more than any other superstar since I've been here. I've spent more time on suspension than most superstars have spent in that ring. And you want to know why I'm still here after all the stuff that I pulled and all the times I got in trouble and all the times I hurt people and all the times I shit in people's bags. You want to know why I'm still here and I'm sitting at home going, white privilege? Or maybe that's unfair. Nepotism? Son of Cowboy Bob Orton? No, it's not that. What else? What else could it be? How about just straight across the board preferential treatment? I mean, there are a few people that come to mind that could get away with that same level of discipline, kayfabe discipline. You know what I mean? Like, the idea is that I'm the best, as he says. That's why I'm still here. I'm the best. I'm a 14-time champ. Can't argue with that. But the idea that, like, if this was real, which, again, I know it's not, but for the sake of argument, if this was real, nobody who's been suspended that many times over 14 years or fined that much money over the course of 14 years would still have a job. Unless they're getting preferential treatment. And his point is, because I'm the best. I'm like, well, I suppose. But there's a lot of people who are the best who are not getting preferential treatment. For whatever reason. I don't want to cast too many aspersions, but yeah. Jesus. Anyway, he says something, and then Drew McIntyre stops looking at Randy and then looks at the hard camera, and he says something. I mean, it's mostly like, I'm going to win this race. No, I'm going to win this match. No, I'm going to win this match. However, sir, I beg to differ. Point of order, sir. I maintain that I shall win the match. You drive a hard bargain, my good man. But I believe that I shall win the match. That's what these promos feel like to me. It's like, it's basically that. I want it. No, I want it. Well, then I know what. You know? I don't know, man. It's just... Fine. We'll talk more about what the hell's going on with that in a bit. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. So, what the hell happened after this? That was a long-ass fuck. Oh, that's right. Fucking, he's about to leave, right? Yeah. He's about to leave, and then Miz and Morrison show up. And, it's a long-ass fucking segment. Miz and Morrison show up and they start talking to Drew and yeah, you guys don't know what the hell you're doing. I'll kick your butts again, kind of stuff. That's right. Anyway, so sorry about that. Miz is running his mouth and Morrison is helping him. And the stink of Miz and this character has gotten all over John Morrison. And I used to really enjoy him as part of the act because he got all the funny bits. He still does. And he's really good at them. But can I just watch him fucking be awesome in the ring? Can I just watch that? Can you just have him do that? Like, if you have the Google or the YouTubes, go on it and find a match from the first season of Lucha Underground, John Morrison versus Prince Puma. Prince Puma, of course, was the luchador version of Ricochet. It's the same guy playing a different character with a lucha mask. They had a match called All Night Long, which went for 60 minutes. It's an Iron Man match, and it was fucking awesome. Yeah, that's 6 years ago. So I'm going to be conservative. I'm going to say Morrison now is 85% of the man that he was then in the ring. I don't know about other parts of him. 15% of that part of him is gone. But in the ring, I'm going to say he's 85% the same as he was. And that versus Ricochet, who's still 100%. Would be badass. There's the whole thing is like you have them both on the same show now. There's no excuse not to run that back. Like Morrison in the ring with some of the guys you got, like John Morrison in the ring versus AJ Styles would be amazing. John Morrison versus Mustafa Ali would be amazing. All these things, but instead he's just standing there in a suit and some sunglasses doing the funny lines for Miz. Like you're wasting this guy's final 5 to 10 years of his career, his final 4 years of his prime, and then beyond that, it'll still be great, but he won't be that good. You're wasting him, especially with like you know stuff like you know Drew just like takes a step toward him and he runs away. I wish they would book some of these guys to be actual fighters and not opportunistic cowards at every turn. Miz, Jack Drew. Drew says, he dares Miz to try and cash in the briefcase tonight because Miz says he's going to be the champion by the end of the night, no matter who wins, Orton or McIntyre. And then you'll have to try to take the title back from me. I dare you to pull something tonight, blah, blah, blah. Lana had an idea, which is never a good thing to start a sentence. Lana had an idea that she was inspired by the fact that The Miz, who is the natural enemy, I suppose, of the number WWE title holder, The Miz would have a tag match where he's tag teaming with Randy Orton last week. So she was like, I saw that, and I thought, why not? Since you and I are enemies, you put me through a table 8 weeks in a row or whatever, 8 out of 9 weeks. I don't fucking care. Too many times. Maybe we should tag together. So she was the one who came up with this match. It's her, Adnaya, and Shayna versus Asuka and Mandy and Dana. So she wants to prove it's not a fluke that she's on the team. And she knows that they think it is, but she wants to prove herself. So I'm all here for Team Raw. And I'm not going to refuse to tag in like Randy did last week. Baszler says, that's cool. That's cute and everything. But it's not about you. This is about me and it's the two of us, me and Nia, proving that we are the run the division. And Jack says, you better not tag yourself in, no matter what. So, Lana starts the match, and Baszler immediately attacks her out, saying, you're not allowed to wrestle. And I agree. I agree. She should be not allowed to wrestle. Baszler does this amazing, like, I don't know, swing around the back, like, backbreaker thing on a knee. That was really cool. She's very innovative, and I really enjoy her. Dana Brooks out on the is out on the ringside area, out on the floor. And Jax appears like she's gonna do the big Samoan drop to the announce table to Dana Brooke. But Mandy Rose runs over there. Mandy Rose has tape all over her left shoulder, which is the shoulder that she hurt when Nia threw her through the ropes too hard. The idea behind the let's shit can somebody out of the ropes is you lead them to where the ropes are and then let go and they finish it. They use the momentum you've given them to control it to keep going. You don't take them to the end of the ropes and then continue throwing them through that. That's dangerous. So, of course, Nia did that and hurt Mandy's shoulder legitimately. So this is the match where they figure out a way to get her off TV for a while she fucking has surgery, probably. And what an ingenious way of doing it in a kayfabe way. They have Nia hold Mandy in a weird position with her arm kind of like her shoulder leaning forward using really wrong weight on it. I think they built a bunch of arm, her rest underneath too. Ugh, bad. But Nia holds her in that position. And then Shayna comes up and stomps right on her shoulder joint. And Mandy is in horrible pain. And they go to commercial. Mandy never is a part of the match anymore because she's legitimately injured. And they figured out a way to get her off TV. So the rest of the match doesn't really matter. I don't know why I'm even going to it in this much detail, except for that injury and how they did it, which Baszler does the thing where she like stomps on your elbow as it's like weirdly placed in the ring. But the way she does it, she's not holding your arm in place while she does it, which kind of breaks the immersion. Like, as soon as she takes her hand away from your arm in that position, like, move your arm so she can't stomp on it. There have been a few times where the spot isn't supposed to actually land during the match. So she tries it, and her opponent moves their arm away. And every time that happens, I'm like, well, why doesn't everybody do that? Because it's so obvious. In this particular case, they have Nia holding Mandy there so she can't move. And I think that's a much more clever way of getting that done. So Baszler gets the Kinderfuda clutch on Asuka. And Asuka is done. She is locked in. There's no way she's getting out of that. Except Lana tagged herself in, so Baszler has to break the hold, and Lana immediately loses. She immediately gets kicked and goes in the Asuka lock and loses. So what happens after that? Well, I'm pleased to say that Shayna and Nia gather around Lana, and they say, you know what? We've changed our mind. You show a lot of courage, and we accept you. And you know what? We are your best friends now. Let's go all out and go shopping together. Get a coffee. Let's hang out. We should be friends, like real friends, you know? Like, let's bond. Let's, like, have, like, a girls' night where we'll, like, all sit in, you know, stay inside and, like, eat ice cream and dish and watch trash TV. Oh, my God, it'll be great. No, I'm kidding. They put her through the table for the 9th time, and it was I was worried there. I thought they weren't going to do it. I was really concerned. I was concerned they weren't going to do it for the 9th time in 10 weeks. I really thought, oh, man, I hope they don't refrain from doing the thing I hate. I really hope they do the thing I hate again. That's what I thought this entire time. Nia does do the thing I started doing with, like, you showed a lot of courage, and I'm proud of you. Then she says, psych, because it's 1997. I don't know when the fuck was psych a thing. Feels like 1997. Psych! She puts it to the table anyway. Yay, hooray. So, this just in. The men's team Raw of Survivor Series can't get along. Oh, no. What's going to happen on Sunday? These guys just can't seem to get on the same page. What a tragedy and a travesty. And oh, no, I don't know what's going to happen. The intrigue. It's fucking stupid. I hate it. It happens every year. Survivor Series season is the motherfucking worst. It's the literal dirt worst. It's the drizzling shits. Survivor Series season is anal leakage. That's what I think. So, they can't even do this fucking segment right. Like, it was... AJ standing there, obviously holding 5 Raw t-shirts. He's just holding them. They're draped over his forearm as he's talking. They're talking and talking about, like, oh, you know, we hate nicknames and Matt Riddle's like, I'm a rapist. No, I'm sorry. He didn't say that. That's only alleged. He said, I like nicknames, I think. You're a skipper and I like you, AJ. If we keep arguing like this, we're going to lose. So I got it. We got us a tune-up against a team that everybody hates, Retribution. That's right. Everybody hates Retribution. So then he says, I got you all matching shirts. Now, the shirts say on the front, Raw. And on the back, they say USA, which is not the country. It's the network. So it's really funny that everybody is holding up the shirts to read the front and inadvertently, like, just doing a shill job for the network they're on, because they're showing the back of the shirt to the camera. And here's what I wanted. And it would have been so easy. And it would have been really actually a good use of the giant dude who's his bodyguard. I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to say giant. Enormous individual who is his bodyguard. If he was standing there with a briefcase, like a metal briefcase, chained to his wrist even, you know what I mean? And if Sheamus is like, hey, AJ, what's with the briefcase? Oh, thank you. I forgot. Guys, I got you something. I got you all presents, you know, it's a bonding thing. So we're all on the same page going to Survivor Series. I don't know. I mean, like, that's more Jamie Noble than AJ Styles. It's a little too Southern. But he says he should do this. He should have done this. Hey, open it up. And so the giant guy holds it up and flips it, and the thing opens, right? And you can even do the little light that coming in from the briefcase goes up and shines on the dude's face like it's Pulp Fiction. They can be funny and clever. And then everyone thinks, oh my God, it's jewels or money or a new PS5. What's it gonna be? And instead, it's just t-shirts. Like AJ just pulls out t-shirts and hands them to everybody. And AJ's like, ha, isn't that the greatest gift ever? And I was like, aw. And like, you could have done some fun thing with like Braun's like, a t-shirt? Or I don't like t-shirts unless they're extra small. Look at this one I'm wearing. It's skin tight. Keith Lee could do the thing that he said. Mine's way too small. Do you want mine? And they could have traded. That would then be cute. And Matt Riddle's like, oh, what'd you think? Well, I thought maybe it was weed. I don't know, they couldn't do that, but you know, it'd be funny if they did. And Sheamus is like, I don't know. I'm Irish, and so I don't like t-shirts. I don't know what. Well, whatever, he has a problem with the t-shirt. Maybe it's because the fucking t-shirts are stupid and lame. But they all get pissy and walk off. So Riddle comes back and he says, I just want to admit you, like, hey Skipper, I want to let you know I have a nickname. I want everybody to be included. I have a nickname for your bodyguard. And then AJ's like, get the hell out of here. Go prepare for the match. And he yells the nickname that he had for the large person. But I couldn't hear it. I don't know what it was. I'm assuming it was hilarious. God, it was hilarious. Then he says, well, I don't even know why. Like, AJ starts talking to the bodyguard about what just happened. Can you believe that? And it's like, why am I even talking to you? You don't even speak English. And the bodyguard says, of course I speak English. And I'm thinking, yes. Of course you speak English. You were the bouncer at Raw Underground, standing in front of the door. You talked English to Shane McMahon every fucking night that happened for however long that was, 6 weeks. We all heard you. It wasn't that long ago. We all knew that you spoke English. Did AJ not watch Raw when he was on SmackDown? Before the draft, I mean, it's possible. I wouldn't have watched her off. I had any say in the matter. Charlie Caruso interviews Dana Brooke about what's going on with Mandy. Mandy's in the training room, and Reckoning beats the hell out of Dana Brooke. It's the lady from Retribution, who as yet has not had a match, but now she has beaten up Dana Brooke. Because she likes chaos, I guess. So, the Firefly Funhouse was fun. Like I say, Alexa Bliss is having a blast, and that's what matters. Like, I don't know how effective the whole thing is, but she's having fun. Good for her for having fun. It's a decent one because they do one of the pre-tape bits where he trains for his big. Match versus The Miz. Because The Miz challenged Bray Wyatt to a match earlier tonight. He said Bray Wyatt is a psychopath or some bullshit. But Wyatt trains in the art of punching puppets while blindfolded. I forget what else. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great, but it was decent. It looks like I'm ready, and I hope the Miz is too. And they all wave goodbye, and it's cute. Like I said, Miz, like Bliss is having a lot of fun. And I guess that's what's important. Raw tag team title match. So, Hurt Business comes out first. Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin with MVP and Lashley. And they do the same basic promo they always do about how their business, and we're gonna beat the New Day, we're gonna become new tag champs, and we're gonna beat the Street Profits. Bobby Lashley's gonna beat down Sami Zayn, and we're gonna put SmackDown out of business. And Kofi and Xavier come out. And it basically is just 3.5 minutes of MVP stepping all over the New Day's lines, which is weird. They do a thing where it would have been slightly funnier than not funny at all if MVP hadn't stepped on Kofi Kingston's line. But he says, you guys are a bunch of jerks. Is this way? Blah, 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 blah. We think you guys are a bunch of jerks. He obviously has something left to say, but MVP goes, come on in the ring and say that to my face. And Kofi's like, hold up. I got a punchline here. You got to make it my punchlines out. Like I was saying, we think you guys are a bunch of jerks, so we don't call you the Hurt Business. We call you the Jerk Business. And MVP, right, they goes, that was your punchline, that was your big punchline. And Kofi turns to Xavier, like, yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, I think you guys would have gotten it if you hadn't stepped on his line. Which is funny, and those guys are good. The dad humor there, Hurt Business, more like Jerk Business, huh? It works for the New Day. It's in character with them. They do those lame jokes. The thing I hate about it, though, is they absolutely would have given that line to Drew McIntyre if he was feuding with Bobby Lashley. And Lashley's in the Hurt Business now. The last time he was feuding with Lashley, he was in the Lana Business. Yeah. Some people call you the Hurt Business. I call you the Jerk Business. Laugh track. Anyway, they keep stepping on the lines. It's bad. This match is a banger. It's so good, guys. If you didn't see the match, go back and watch it. It's the one thing from last night that I will recommend. The one thing. The one thing. And I wholeheartedly recommend it. It's an audition by Cedric and Shelton. Even more so than their previous match that they won versus the New Day. That was a non-title match for some unknown reason. Even though they were talking about it being the title match the whole fucking time. Anyway, it's an audition that they had successfully for to be future tag champs, I think. They work really, really well together. Cedric and Shelton together, and then those two guys with Xavier and Kofi. They work so well together that if it were up to me, and I know they would never have done this, which is why it's not up to me, I suppose, I would have had them win. I would have had them beat the New Day last night and then beat Street Profits on Sunday. And you could have, like, MVP get involved and, you know, protect Street Profits a little bit. Distraction bullshit. I mean, I hate that, but you could have had that happen if you really wanted to protect the Street Profits, but I wouldn't have. I would have had Cedric and Shelton beat the Street Profits clean to announce these guys are the champs on Raw and they're fucking for real and they work really, really well together. And then they come back to Raw the night after Survivor Series. We forget all about this stupid fucking Survivor Series season. And we build to a nice feud, a lengthy feud between New Day and Hurt Business. I think that'd be great. The one thing about it, though, that sucks is that it made me realize, what are they doing with Big E? They're having him do fake laughing at the Street Profits on SmackDown. I'm assuming he's going to be the last guy added to Team SmackDown on Friday for the SmackDown match, but I don't know. I mean, it could be somebody else. I don't know. But how's that big singles push working so far on SmackDown? They kept him on SmackDown to be a single star. And how's that going? You know, post-draft. Good? Not good? Oh, that's too bad. If they had just kept him with New Day and moved the whole team over to Raw, think of the six-man tags we'd get between Hurt Business and New Day. Also, the perfect guy, I think, to feud with and then eventually take the title off of Bobby Lashley is Big E. It's going to be great. Like, Bobby Lashley, try putting your giant mitts around the trapezius of Big E. It's not going to be easy. The full Nelson's not going to work like you want it to. It would be a really great thing, but they're not going to do it because they kept Big E on SmackDown for no fucking reason. There are a few things from the commentary. Byron Saxton saying, New Day has got to be incorporated in that conversation when you're talking about best tag teams of all time. As though there was, like, don't they now own the record for most title reigns along with longest title reign? What are your other qualifications? Like, they're obviously, you say something like, gotta be included in the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the Hardy Boys. The Hardy Boys or Edge and Christian have got to be included. They've got to be incorporated. You obviously the New Day is there. Obviously the Dudleys are there. You know, I get that. Legion of Doom, Demolition going way back. Obviously those guys are there, but you also have to consider, even though they didn't have the number of title reigns or the length of the title reigns, you got to consider Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian for what they did to the business. That's a conversation you can have. The conversation in my mind begins and ends with the New Day. That's it. Now now they have the accolades. That's it. I don't feel like there's much of an argument. But it's just weird the way that Byron's like, well, I don't know. You know, you got to incorporate him. Plus, Byron Saxton again, fucking up. At least this time, Tom Phillips called him on it. Shelton Benjamin, a tag team specialist, held the tag titles a number of times over the course of his career. Throughout his career. That's what he could. A number of times throughout his career. And Tom Phillips immediately goes, yes, twice. The most recent time was 17 years ago. So when you say that a guy has held the tag team titles a number of times, if that number is two, you could just say twice. You know, has held the tag team titles twice, which is a true statement. Has held the tag team titles a number of times. Well, officials have flagged this tweet as containing false or misleading information. No, I'm sorry. That's not true. Especially also throughout his career. If throughout his career is, well, he had the tag team titles here and also here, and a few years later he had them again here and then again here, that's a number of times throughout his career. If the number is two, that's twice. 17 years ago is Shelton Benjamin actually held the tag titles twice, almost two decades ago. That's a fact. That's a statement. What you're saying is just gibberish, gobbledygook. It's fake news. You know what's not fake news? This match ruled. Before the commercial break, they did a modified doomsday device thing, which they kicked out of, which looked great. It was really built really well to the near fall. Alexander doing dives where he's just going too fast, and springing too far with the suicide dives, where he's just going headlong directly into the barricade. Like, I think he thought there was a lot more clearance between the ring and the barricade, and there was not. Like, two in a row where he just went full on into the barricade. And the third one was supposed to be like this, like, hey, cool, look at me go. Watch how cool and slick this is. As I slide through the ropes on a suicide dive, I'm going to stick out one hand and tag my tag team partner for a legal tag while I'm doing the suicide dive. And he's able to make the tag, but his leg clips the thing. He goes through the ropes and right onto his face. And I'm so glad he's alive. The match is a lot of great near falls, a lot of really good things. Like, it's just a really good match. Cedric ends up taking the pin. I would have chosen Shelton to take the pin, but I guess it doesn't really matter. It's a great match, and I hope it leads to something. Obviously, they didn't do the thing where they put the titles on Cedric and Shelton last night, and they're not going to have them beat the Street Profits, even if they did, the Street Profits win. But you have to build to a TLC match, a TLC, between these two teams. And that's where you have to put it on the Hurt Business. And establish them. Make them real rivals to the New Day. If you ever get Big E to figure out a way to get him from Raw to from SmackDown to Raw, like, have it be like, it's basically, they would never do this because they're really stupid. But have it be like it's 4-on-2. The boys, New Day, can't get their titles back because Lashley is always getting involved, and MVP is always directing traffic to get everything to get Lashley involved. MVP is also putting the boots to everybody when they went up on the outside. They can't get their titles back, and it kills Big E to watch this. Have Big E in the fucking Thunderdome watching the thing. I don't know how long they're going to be in the Thunderdome for anymore, but have him watching the thing on there. He's concerned. He's watching his boys get their asses beat. So he goes to Adam Pearce because he's the only authority figure in the fucking company anymore. And he begs Adam Pearce to figure out a way to get him on Raw. Work out a trade. I don't care. I got to get over there and help my boys. And they figure out a way to do it. I don't know what it is, but they figure out a way to do it. Maybe on Raw, there's somebody who can't stand being on Raw, needs to be on SmackDown. You can do a little trade for him. You could do a little storyline out of it. It wouldn't be hard. I could probably write it down for you about 20 minutes. Fucking do it. Not difficult. It's a huge missed opportunity for Big E not to be with his boys, Kofi and Xavier, right now, considering they're going into a feud, it looks like, with the Hurt Business, who is all about the numbers game. Really cool big double team move. They call it Daybreak. Which is like a combination, like, backbreaker double stomp thing. Oof, cool. There's a very sweet and heartwarming scene that occurs about midway through Raw last night. Very sweet scene where Sheamus catches up with Drew McIntyre. Drew's like, I gotta prepare for my match. I'm not even dressed yet. I'm still wearing my street clothes. And Sheamus is like, hold on. It's, we were talking about our history. And I know how much it meant to your mom and everything. And I found something that's belonged to you. Something, that's been lost for a very long time. And here it is. And I'm giving it to you now. It looked to me like it was like, you know, the Scottish entrance attire that he used, like his first time where he debuted on SmackDown, and then he went right back to developmental after that, but he was wearing like the Scottish tartan, the kilt and everything. It looked like that's what it was, but it also, so like, he delivered it to Drew in like an old timey trunk, like a chest, like a treasure chest. Which I think they were trying to say that it was like ancient Scottish Highlander nobleman robes. I don't fucking know what they were trying to do. Like, if it's his old ring gear, that's kind of cool. It reminds him of home, and that's, you know, during this time, that's got to be difficult, and I understand, and that's very emotional. But Drew's obviously overcome with this, and I never thought I'd see this stuff again. And so then he turns around, and Sheamus is there, presenting him with a giant claymore. It's a double-handed great sword, broad sword, as it's sometimes called. It's huge, very big. It is quite obviously, I don't know, in my hometown, the mall, Valley River Center in Eugene, Oregon, had a swords and cutlery shop. When I was a kid, I don't know, 10, 11, I'd always go in there and look at all like the suits of armor and the big knives behind glass and everything. And it was always like really, they were cool. They were like for display only. But they were big and shiny. And it was like really cool. Cause I was like, oh, it looks like He-Man sword or some bullshit, you know? That's obvious. They fucking got that from this. Like they got that sword from one of those shops. They could have gotten it from like the Disney knife and sword shop. It's obviously a big fake. But it seemed to me like Sheamus was trying to say, this is like your family's old broadsword. Like your great 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 granduncle chopped the head off of some Englishman in a battle of fucking whatever. Freedom! You know, whatever the fuck they wanted to say. Like that's it seems like that's what they were trying to do. Like William Wallace used this broadsword to chop a dude in half, and here it is. And it's totally not that. I mean, it's possible they weren't trying to say that, but it looked like they were trying to say that, so it's weird. Like those things were made out of fucking wrought iron. This was big, shiny silver steel. It wobbled. Those fucking swords did not wobble. They wobbled you. Anyway, it was nevertheless heartwarming to see Sheamus so happy for his friend to have a chance to get his title back. And then I think of this. Are they going to turn Sheamus babyface to like be Drew's friend and then turn him back heel so they can feud with Drew? Maybe they even have to turn babyface. Maybe just have him turn on Drew because, you know, he's Sheamus. What I really hope they're not trying to do is rehabilitate Sheamus, considering like 6 months ago, he on SmackDown, he knocked out a guy, stole that guy's rental car, ran over another guy with it, poured alcohol all over the inside of the vehicle, stashed the body of the unconscious man that he knocked unconscious in the bushes, and poured alcohol over that unconscious body. I'm not sure in what order he did all these things, but he did all these things. So as to frame this innocent man for vehicular manslaughter, because again, there's no way he could have known that by running over Elias, he would not have killed him. He just ran him over. If he dies, he dies. So framed him for vehicular manslaughter, also shaming him because this man is a known recovering alcoholic and drug addict. So he's trying to show him that, well, he had a relapse. And now, like, that's one of the most horrifyingly disgusting and evil things I can think of beyond, I don't know, like outright serial murder. But the callousness and disregard for human life. I'm going to mow down this dude with a car. If he dies, he dies. If not, whatever, I don't fucking care. But then I'm going to try and get this other guy in trouble for it. Not only like make him go to jail for vehicular manslaughter and drunk driving, but also shame him in the eyes of the public who would think, oh no, he's had another relapse. How terrible. Like the idea that a guy could do all that and 6 months later, hey, Drew, remember how you're Scottish? Here's a sword. Like, we're supposed to be like, oh, Seamus, you're such a good friend. Like, this happens later in the evening, but I'll bring it up now because it has to do with it. Eliza's been putting up flyers saying wanted Jeff Hardy for questioning or something, and he's like 555 Amen. I guess Amen is the title of one of his songs or some shit. He's putting up flyers like, please arrest this guy. And like, dude, you work with him. You know who, but that's weird. Jeff Hardy's upset about the flyers, and he says so to blonde, not Charlie Caruso. And then he goes and finds Elias backstage, and Elias is like, just admit it. Another thing that they're doing, and I hate that they're doing this. I really fucking hate it. Anytime somebody who's a member of the Raw roster appears backstage as part of a scene of some kind, to let you know what their name is, they put a little chyron underneath them. Like, Nikki Cross is seen walking around backstage looking for Alexa Bliss later in the show. And this on the bottom, Nikki Cross. Oh, is that who that is? Good, because I didn't know who she was. Like, who is that for? Is that for people with, like, memory problems? People who watch the show every week but can't quite put the name to the face? People who haven't watched the show in forever, or people who've never watched the show, watching it for the first time? If it's for people who really don't know who these people are, then put some context in your fucking scene you're writing for them and have that be it to tell us. When Jeff finds Elias backstage, it says Elias right under his picture, right under his thing on the video, and the Elias is like in a font where it looks like a guitar. Ooh, fun. Fucking stupid. Jeff Hardy's like, I didn't run you over with a car. If you keep accusing me, he's like grabbing Elias by the beard, like just ripping tufts of hair out of his beard, which like, my three-year-old doesn't do it to me anymore. When she was 1.5, oh yeah, she just loved to like get whole fistfuls of daddy's beard with like, you know, hands covered with peanut butter. Just like, just get up in there and just yank on it. Ow. Did it to myself now. I don't know why I did that. I think I got one of them out of there. I think I pulled out a piece of hair. It hurts. So I sympathize with Elias there, but not elsewhere, because, you know, Jeff Hardy's like, he definitely says, if you keep accusing me of doing something I didn't do, then what I do to you will be a lot worse than running you over with a car. If I'm innocent of something and you keep accusing me of it, I'm going to be guilty of something. It's like, they're jumping through a whole lot of hoops. Stop accusing me of shit I didn't do, Elias, or I'm going to beat the shit out of you. That's what I got to do. I hate the storyline. Because the only thing, like, if Jeff Hardy truly didn't do it, he says, I was found innocent. Well, I mean, did you go to trial? Did they arrest you for that? They should have arrested somebody for that. Because I listed all the things that it was, and that's a lot of things, for the cops just to not do anything about it. What am I saying? Cops never do actual investigations. They never actually investigate anything for anybody. No, they're just handing out traffic tickets to brown and black people. Protect and serve. Anyway, the only two ways this fucking storyline can end is with Jeff obviously not being the guy who ran over Elias, because we established that, or with Jeff actually being the guy who ran over him and actually have relapsed, and actually have done all that stuff, which meant his whole act, when he had that feud with Sheamus, when he was actually the bad guy, and Sheamus was the good guy. Jeff Hardy threw piss in the face of Sheamus, and Sheamus was the good guy. Oh God, how horrible that would feel for all of us, and also how fucking unconscionable that you would do that. That you would write that thing 6 months later. Elias could have come back as a righteous babyface to attack Sheamus, the guy who we established years ago at this point, was the guy who ran him over. But instead, he had Sheamus come back, Elias come back as a heel and attack the guy that we know who didn't run him over. It's all fucking stupid. Stop doing it. Stop doing bad storylines. Do good ones instead. Mustafa Ali does an amazing, I think I said Mustafa Ali earlier, I apologize. Mustafa Ali talks about reckoning, because I have already proven that we're one step ahead of everybody else. Team Raw, says Ali, is full of spineless cowards waiting to stab each other in the back, just doing whatever they can to get ahead, which is true. He's not lying. We just have to wait for Team Raw to damage themselves, and then, well, I hope ASL, the captain, is got ready to step up. They announced this match was going to happen, and I was like, you don't have to do this, guys. You really don't. You don't have to. Creative, Vince, you don't have to do this. You don't. Ali got the first win the entire faction has had. Last week in a banger versus Ricochet. He choked him out in a submission. It looks so cool. What a great thing. You can build off of that and creating a viable heel stable with a charismatic leader. You don't have to feed these guys to Team Raw to prove that Team Raw can coexist. I'm very happy that Retribution wasn't buried by having them lose to a team that can't get on the same page. But I hate they're doing this. Can they stay on the same page? Bullshit. Stop it. I hate it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm so glad that come next Monday, we're going to be done with Survivor Series and moving on to something else, because this is just, yes, they keep beating each other up. They keep being angry. At one point, Keith Lee and Braun are going to fight on the outside, and AJ gets up from commentary because he's on commentary, and he runs over and goes, hey, stop fighting. So one of them shoves AJ directly into the belly button of the very tall and large person, human being, individual, who is his bodyguard, and he is about to, I don't know, attack Braun Strowman. And AJ's like, no, wait, we can all work things out. And they go to commercial. Eventually, you're going to have to fucking do something with the very large individual bodyguard guy. You're going to have to do something. He's going to have a match or something. He can't just keep like being generally big and using that general bigness to frighten people. It's lazy. They fight each other almost as much as they fight Retribution. And it's only because they're fighting each other that Ali is able to get a pinfall roll up on Riddle. And then they fight each other more after the match. And I don't know, like, what this does, except for, like, wow, how's Team Raw going to get on the same page by Sunday? They sure seem to be at each other's throats right now. Golly gee, it's so important for them to win this match versus Team SmackDown. By the way, Team SmackDown still has only 4 out of 5 guys that have been named to the team. So we don't even know what's going to be... Boy, oh boy, the intrigue. It's just fucking stupid. Just fucking stupid. Like, have the match. Make two guys on the team not like each other, but everybody else gets along. You know, like... I don't know. That might work. If you insist on having dissension in the ranks, because that's the only fucking story you know how to tell come Survivor Series season. Both teams on Raw hate each other. On SmackDown, I mean, it's Jey Uso beat up Kevin Owens, so they can't like each other very much. Seth Rollins is an asshole to everybody. We don't even know who the fourth guy is, and on fucking the fucking women only have three. But all three of those like each other. So I guess that's good. Of the four men's and women's team for Survivor Series, only one of them is an actual team, and that one only has 3 out of 5 people on it. WWE booking, everybody! Nikki Cross is backstage looking for Alexa Bliss. What else is new? Cross says, friends never give up on each other. And the Fiend has hypnotized Bliss. She's hypnotized Alexa. So no matter what, I've got to get Bliss away from the Fiend. I've got to get Alexa away from... No matter what, I've got to. So, Miz takes the mic and he says, hey, listen, Bray, I know you and I haven't seen eye to eye. I mean, listen. A few months ago, this was also like a fucking year ago. A few months ago, you snuck into my house and put a Fiend doll in my baby's crib. Also tonight, I said some mean things about you. I'm willing to let bygones be bygones. Water under the bridge, as far as I'm concerned. How about we work? See, you want to take out Randy Orton. I want to get the WWE title. Let's work together to make our dreams come true. And that would be great. And I would actually like that if we could get on the same page with the writers and Vince that the Fiend doesn't fucking care about the WWE Championship, because why would he? What does the Fiend get out of it? He's a clown demon from hell with dreadlocks. What does he fucking care if he's the champion? Is he worried about the bump in pay? So it would make sense if he's like, listen, I know all you care about is beating up Randy Orton. Great. I care about the title, though. So how about we do things together? You beat up Randy Orton, then I'll pin him, and I'll become champion, and you're going to beat up Randy Orton. Perfect. Otherwise, no, because we've been talking about how Bray wants his title back. And Bray is the Fiend. Oh, no, wait, is he? More on that in a bit. So, says, why don't we work together? And then Alexa Bliss comes out with her new fiendish music, and she says, I have a message from him. He says, no. And again, I've talked this before, but how great would it be if they had a thing where they could change her voice with her microphone, give him a cue, and anytime she's supposed to say something that he says, that the Fiend says, they flip a switch on the soundboard and it changes her voice so that when she says it, it sounds like, no. But it's her mouth making the sound. But when it comes out of the microphone, it sounds like the devil is saying it. Wouldn't that be better than just Alexa Bliss saying, I have a message from him. He says, no. Wouldn't that be better than the thing that you're doing? I maintain that it would. So then she laughs and Nikki Cross comes out and she says, you have to leave him because he's bad news. Please, we're best friends. He's bad for you. He's not good for you. You have to leave him, which is a weird like analogy for domestic violence and abuse survivors that I don't know that they're aware of. But it's weird. Like, he's hypnotized you. You have to leave him because he's really bad for you. Please leave him. I don't know. It's weird context. And Alexa says, "Oh my God, Nikki, you're right." And then slaps her. And then they fight. And then WWE officials come out and they wrangle with them. And they pull them apart. And Adam Pearce is holding Alexa Bliss by himself. And it takes like four people to hold back Nikki Cross because if you remember from her days in Sanity, she's insane. Then the Firefly Funhouse music starts. And Alexa Bliss immediately stops trying to claw out Nikki Cross's eyes from across the stage and gets very happy. And she goes over and links. Bray comes out and like stares daggers at Nikki Cross. So the next thing we're going to get is Fiend Alexa, I think. Fiend Alexa is going to start having matches. I don't think they're going to go full mask with her, but she's going to behave like the Fiend in the matches. And I think she's going to have the same way Wyatt does the Mr. Rogers character, like he does here last night, and also does matches as the Fiend. I think Alexa Bliss is going to have two different personas that she can bring out whenever she wants. And the first one, she's going to go as the Fiend, is going to be to beat the shit out of Nikki Cross. Anyway, they link arms and go down to the ring. And the match is... Bray Wyatt says, I can forgive you. Let's shake hands. And Miz tries to kick him, but misses. Morrison's out there in a suit, just hanging out. And Bliss is out there, too. And this match lasts like 5 minutes, less than that. The only thing of note, really, is that Miz is Morrison's trying to get involved, like, with Bray Wyatt when Bray Wyatt's, like, standing in the corner. And Bliss does this amazing running jump thing off the apron, like a flying crossbody onto Morrison that knocks him over the barricade, and they both tumble back there, which I thought was an amazing stunt. And then Miz does his like running, jumping clothesline into Wyatt in the corner. Clotheslines him. And Bray no-sells it and is in the perfect position to give a Sister Abigail, because the guy's got his arm draped across him, and he's got his arm draped across the other guy, and he just walks him right out of the corner. Sister Abigail, 1, 2, 3. Bliss peeks up from behind the barricade, and she's very happy, and they walk off together. Hey, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but the Undertaker is definitely, for sure, absolutely, 100%, no backsies, definitely, 100%, 1,000,000%, super for sure this time, gonna appear for the last time at Survivor Series. That is 100,000,000% true, and I would not be telling you otherwise. That is 100,000,000% true. It's the dead man's final farewell this Sunday at Survivor Series. 100,000,000%. Definitely not ever going to show up again. Definitely. Positively. Oh! I forgot my favorite fucking part, and this is, God, I hate Byron Saxton. The Fiend and Bliss are walking up the ramp together, arm in arm after winning the match. And on the Jumbotron is the Fiend. But we all know, we've established this many times, they have, erroneously, I believe, to the detriment of the character, I believe, established that Bray Wyatt and the Fiend are one and the same. He is he, they are they, are both the same person. So Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss are walking up the ramp, arm in arm, skipping together in harmony, happy-go-lucky, they won the fucking day. And then up on the Jumbotron, comes the Fiend. And he just sits there, looks at them in his pre-tapedness with the music playing. Right? And it's Bray and Alexa are frozen watching this, watching him watch them. And then Byron Saxton says, as this is happening, Byron Saxton says, "The Fiend." And that's it. And then they cut away from it and they go on to the next thing. He just says, "The Fiend." Again, like we don't fucking know that. Is that for the four people who are tuning into Raw for the first time ever that you would tell us that's the Fiend? We know that's the fucking Fiend. Do any other shows do this? Do any other shows write programming, like write things into the programming that are just for the people who are watching the first episode, like their first episode of the show? Like it's just for them. If you have been paying attention ever, you would know that's the Fiend. This isn't even taken into account. How is that fucking the Fiend? How is that the Fiend? If Bray Wyatt's on the ramp, how is that the Fiend? Like, shouldn't that be the thing? Like, is the Fiend somebody different than Bray Wyatt? That should be the question. Like, wait, guys, if that's Bray Wyatt on the ramp, then who's that up? Bray Wyatt is the Fiend, right? That could be the thing that you could have Byron Saxton do. He could be the stupid guy who's like, guys, wait a minute. If that's Bray Wyatt and that's the Fiend, well, oh my God. You know? Couldn't they just do that? Jesus. So, Charlie Caruso talks to Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce says that Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke will not be cleared for Survivor Series. So they would be replaced by Lacey Evans and Peyton Royce. Because they broke up the Iconics to put Billie Kay and Peyton Royce on separate shows so they can never be tag team competitors again. So they can put Peyton Royce in another tag team. With somebody she has no chemistry with. Instead of the person she has known literally her entire life. Good. Smart. Good job. Charlie Caruso is now joined by Asuka, who, I will remind you, was at the brink of tapping out to the Kirifuda Clutch. But that's never really mentioned. It's just like, eh. Still waiting for that Shayna Baszler versus Asuka one-on-one match for the title. Like, can we get that done? At some point, please. She's interviewed by Charlie Caruso and she just screams in Japanese, and I have no idea what she's saying. She could be like given the menu at her favorite Japanese restaurant. I have no idea what she's saying. She's just screaming it. And I know Vince thinks it's hilarious that she just screams things in Japanese. And I think she's really charismatic, but like I don't have any context for what she's doing. She's just screaming out. I think she's talking about how she's going to beat Sasha Banks as a Survivor Series. It's a very important interview that we did. I will say, every Tuesday morning, I watch the Hulu edit. On Hulu, they edit Raw down to 90 minutes. And then I find out the things that they edited out, and I go and search them out on YouTube or elsewhere on the internet. This episode of Raw is the first time I can remember where every single match on Raw was on the Hulu edit. They just cut out all the extraneous silly promos and the entrances. Oh, they just cut out all the unneeded backstage bullshit and the entrances and went from 3 hours to 90 minutes. That's how bloated this fucking show is. Jesus. Speaking of bloated shows, Let's interview Randy Orton backstage, but I don't want to talk about Randy Orton. Do you want to talk to me? Randy says no, and that's the end of the interview. Good, great, wonderful. Angel Garza talks about how here's what Angel Garza does. This is his promo. Every rose has its thorn. That was his entire promo. Roses have thorns. Thanks, Angel. Thanks for coming out. Appreciate it. So Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are backstage, and they're arguing about who did the worst thing for their team. Nia Jax, who held Mandy in place so that Shayna could stomp on her injured shoulder. A shoulder, by the way, that Nia injured for realsies last week. Nia says, why'd you stomp on Mandy so hard? You could have gone a little easier on her. And Shayna says, why are you putting Lana through a table 9 weeks in a row? That's different. I'm just, that's all in good fun. We could have used Mandy and Dana. Like, don't blame me for Dana. That was reckoning. I actually enjoy their back and forth, their bickering. It's fine. But then, interviewed by interrupted by Lacey Evans and Peyton Royce, and Lacey's like, I know you two nasties aren't talking nastiness about the nasty nasties. Well, nasty, 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 and a nasty, 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 nasty. Stop the count and count the vote. And then Peyton is like, hello, I just want to let you know we're very excited about being on Team Raw. And if you guys would like to strategize, we are all ears. No, bad time. All right, we'll excuse ourselves. That's it. That's it for Evans and Peyton. Jax says to Shayna, "Look what you did! Look who you've saddled us with now." And then Nia says this. This is the worst idea since Quibi, and walks off. And if you don't understand that reference, well, hoo boy. Quibi is a media company that was started by two very, very high up people. People with lots and lots of money. Money they didn't deserve, let's be honest. And they decided, let's start a media company. We're going to buy up all these IPs and shows and movies. We're going to edit them down, cut them all up. So they're like in 10-minute increments or less. And we're going to put them on a service that you pay for. And we're going to give you 10 minutes of a thing at a time. This is great for people who like ride the subway and also nobody else. So it's weird that like it's based entirely on people who will be riding the subway to work in like New York or maybe trains to work in Europe, you know, wherever. But you'd have to be in a really great place that has really great public transportation to be able to really take advantage of this thing on the go, 10 minutes at a time. This is a great thing. They happen to roll it out right before the fucking pandemic. For everybody went home and no longer rode the subway fucking anywhere. Also, the programming was shit and nobody wanted to watch it. So like 6 months after it started, it went belly up entirely. Good news is they're talking about making one of the people responsible for one of the biggest media debacles in the history of media. They're talking about making her the Secretary of Commerce now that Joe Biden is president. So it's a really smart thing. This person who was so smart that they rolled out this thing nobody wanted that was really only geared for very specific kinds of people, but not at all for anybody else. And then they picked it. This is not their fault, but they chose to roll it out right before nobody who would have wanted it could have used it. So that's what Quibi is. And Nia says this is the worst idea since Quibi. Are you sure, Nia? Are you sure it's the worst idea since Quibi. Are you sure it's not the worst idea since your idea that you posted on social media this week? That, so what if the vaccine is 90% effective or 95% effective? My immune system is 99.9% effective. So I think I'm going to go ahead and trust that when it comes to the COVID thing. God made my immune system and I trust him. So good. Hey, Naya, were you trusting God when you went to a surgeon to have your ACLs repaired? Or did you actually trust science in that case? Also, your torn ACLs weren't fucking contagious, Naya. Just saying, Naya. Is it the worst idea since Quibi? I don't know. You know what is the worst idea since Quibi? I mean, not really. But basically, you decided you were going to... let me get this right. Okay. So, Drew McIntyre. Undefeatable. The indomitable, they call him that. champion. Drew McIntyre. Top of the charts. you had him beat Randy Orton at SummerSlam and then again at Clash of Champions? Night of Champions. Clash of Champions? Nash of Champions. You had him beat Randy Orton at Night of Champions after he already beat him at SummerSlam. In between those two things, Randy Orton also lost clean as a whistle in less than 7 minutes to Keith Lee. Then you had Randy get another title shot because Randy gets title shots at Hell in a Cell, and then because as Miz pointed out to Drew last week, the reason that you lost your title was impatience, because he was so stupid as he climbed the goddamn cage to follow Randy. Randy was the one who had to pin him in the ring. You could have just waited, but you were impatient. You were impulsive. You had Randy beat Drew at Hell in a Cell. And some people were thinking, well, I guess that means you wanted Randy to lose to Roman at Survivor Series. And maybe after that, you'll find a way to get the title back on Drew. But by that point, by the time you put the title on Randy, Randy had been really cooled off since his white-hot start to the year. You know, like if you had put the title on Randy at SummerSlam and then not had the match where he lost to Keith Lee, I mean, the whole fall about Drew finding ways to get back a chance to have a match with Randy. Randy could be ducking him, whatever you want, but clawing his way to get back and having a chance to win that thing, where finally Drew gets that title back. After having lost it at SummerSlam, he gets it back the Monday before Survivor Series. You could have done that. But instead you did this. Where Drew was the champion since Mania after dethroning Brock Lesnar, the undethronable. And he took on all comers and beat most of them very handily. And then he beat Randy Orton twice. And then he lost Randy Orton at Hell in a Cell. And Randy became the 14-time champion. Only to then drop the title back to Drew 21 days later. 3 weeks later. On the last Raw before Survivor Series. Not only that, but you had Drew show up on SmackDown and do a whole angle with Roman Reigns that wouldn't have made sense for him to do at all unless you were going to do this and put the title back on Drew on Monday, thereby kind of telegraphing that you were going to do this anyway, making it less of a surprise that you were... You could have... You didn't need to do the Drew fucking thing last Friday. If you hadn't done that and then you do this, at least it comes as a shock. And then you could have Drew invade Roman's place on Friday and say, hey, champ, just want to know I'm the new champ. Looks like it's going to be us in a couple of days. How do you feel about that? You could do that instead. You could do any number of things instead of what you did do, which doesn't make any sense. Explain it to me. Somebody explain why you do this. Is Drew versus Roman the more intriguing match? Yeah, I guess. The problem with Survivor Series and all of it is that there's no stakes. There's nothing on the line. Brand supremacy isn't a fucking thing. It just isn't. Like, Roman saying that SmackDown is better than Raw because I'm on it. I guess that could, like, piss off Drew enough that he would want to beat up Roman, but what the fuck does anybody really get out of it? Nothing? Bragging rights? People like Vince think bragging rights are all that matters, but it doesn't. It doesn't fuck. It could not matter less, really. So, will Drew versus Roman be really great? Yes. Do I think that both of them are too protected for them to actually give us any kind of real resolution to it? Yes. Does it not matter at all because there are no stakes? Also, yes. They took up the last 40 minutes of the show. Drew comes out wearing the Scottish kilt and he's carrying the giant, obviously fake sword, and he stabs it into the stage and a bunch of fucking flames go up in the air like it's goddamn WrestleMania. It was very cool. It also really telegraphed that Drew was going to win. And Drew did win. Randy was in control for most of the thing. They do the goddamn thing where he drove the point of the chair, just grinding it into Drew's broken jaw, a broken jaw he's been wrestling with for months. Maybe you should have him get that looked at. If the jaw can't heal on its own, then it needs to be set properly. It needs to be wired shut for a while. If it's not healing on its own, and why would it not be healing on its own? Because some dude is grinding a chair into it. So, the match isn't all that impressive to me. I mean, again, I kind of figured out who was going to win last Friday, and it was confirmed to me by the goddamn giant sword and the kilt and the flames for his entrance. So, Drew versus Roman. Okay. Great, I guess. A dream match that happened already at WrestleMania 2018, and you probably don't even remember it. I mean, Drew hits a Claymore. He blocks an RKO and hits a Claymore, and he wins. Good. Good. Survivor Series, this version of Survivor Series, is the worst idea since Quibi. It's just, what the fuck? I don't think they've done a good job of building anything. Like, who wants to see Bobby Lashley versus Sami Zayn? I don't, and I'm a fan of both guys. Like, I don't, that hasn't been built properly. None of these things can, because they're on their fucking other opposite shows. I mean, last year was different because he had NXT involved, and I think it would be a lot different for me if NXT was all involved this year, but it's not. You have couple of years ago, the thing I was looking forward to the most, and we never even got it, was Becky versus Ronda. Like, I'm really not looking forward to any of these things. Street Profits versus New Day is going to be really great, and it'll be a really cool thing to look back on someday as these two guys having this match, these two teams having this match, considering what one team is now and will be for the foreseeable future. They're not super old. So there's no reason to think they won't be 20-time champs by the time they're all said and done. And then you get the team of the future in the Street Profits. I mean, unless Vince decides to break them up anytime soon, because he could break them up whenever he wants. But I like Asuka versus Sasha. Seen it. It's going to be great. I've seen it a lot. I saw it a lot this summer. I don't really. It's not something like, oh wow, that match. Gosh, can you imagine? I don't have to imagine. I fucking saw it a lot. Asuka is Raw Women's Champ because she beat Sasha Banks to become Raw Women's Champ. Sasha was Raw Women's Champ because she beat Asuka to become Raw Women's Champ. It wasn't that long ago that whole story played out. So I don't really care to see that. And Roman versus Drew, like, again, like, okay, like, it's, I've said this, like, both guys are about the same size, about the same weight. They both have beards and long, wet, black hair. The only difference is one guy has a finisher where he launches himself head first into your midsection, and the other guy has a finisher where he launches himself feet first into your face. Those are the only two discerning things about them in the ring. I mean, obviously there's more than that, but like, it's okay, great. You're not going to have Drew pin Roman clean. No way, not with what Roman's doing right now. You can't do that to him. You're going to have Roman pin Drew clean right after Drew beat Randy? Well, there's no opportunity for either of them to get their win back or even have a rematch, really, unless you do something weird at WrestleMania where, like, it's title for title. But I was told last night on the broadcast, I was guaranteed by you, WWE, that this Sunday is the one night a year that the superstars of Raw and the superstars of SmackDown, etc., etc. I would hate for you to be lying to your customers and fans. That would be really, really mean of you. What am I saying? You lie all the time. That was Raw. And this has been Sour Graps. Survivor Series, man. It was almost over. We here's the other thing. I don't count last week when Drew showed up on SmackDown. Just like, let's have a little banter, you and I, Roman. And then eventually was like forced into having a match with Jey Uso. So I don't count that as this. We've gone through this entire Survivor Series season without a raid, guys. I don't know if we're going to be so lucky. I think AJ is going to lead Team Raw into Team SmackDown. Because, you know, it's not like four out of the five guys on Raw just were at SmackDown, on SmackDown, being paid by SmackDown 3 weeks ago. But yeah, I think AJ leads Team Raw into Team SmackDown's headquarters on Friday. But man, we're this close. We're this close to getting through a Survivor Series season with no raids. Speaking of raids, this is the end of the show, and now I get to go be a Viking in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. If you guys, if Ubisoft, if you want to send me some money for plugging your awesome Viking game, I wouldn't say no. It's an awesome Viking game. Everybody should play it. I get to play as a Viking. I get to live the Viking experience. But as far as WWE goes, everything sucks.